Okay, my name's Chaz Boyd, like it says right there. I'm a program manager from Redmond at Microsoft, and I work on the DirectX team for quite a while. And today we're going to cover a little bit of some of the special coding tricks that you run into when you're making a DirectX game for the Metro environment. This is the second of three talks. We talked a little bit about how to think about your game when you're first trying to create it. And then this one's going to be a little bit about how you code it. And then the next talk will be some optimization recommendations for how to make sure that your product looks as good as it can, but still runs on every possible device. Okay, first we're going to take a little bit of background on the platform that we're talking about today. This is the platform that you use to create Metro-style applications. It's mostly built of what we call the Windows runtime, which is kind of a replacement for what we used to call Win32. I guess Win32 is still out there. You're using it for classic apps today. It's not going away. The thing I wanted to add here is, unlike the other diagrams, I stuck in where DirectX sits, so Direct3D is also available from C++. It's a little bit trickier to get at through C#, but you can do that as well. It's not available through Java. Okay, now this slide's already been shown today, but the key point of all this is that the Windows runtime is really the foundation of all of this. And then, so independent of what language you use, you're going to be able to access all the routines that are part of the Windows runtime from any of those languages, and they're going to feel appropriate to that language when you do, because the projection syntax delivers the kind of expression that you'd expect. On the other hand, if you want to use C++, if you've got code that's not got some other third-party APIs being called in it, that code will just work as part of the Metro platform. Now, the Windows runtime, the objective is that, is to provide your application with access to all the things that the operating system can do for you. You know, we think we've got a pretty good coverage right there. And then you can access those also through different types of languages. The things I want to point out is there are already applications in the store today that are written in JavaScript and CSS, HTML5, and the whole web development story for Metro applications is actually pretty cool. You get pretty much all the advantages of a web page in terms of distribution and ease of authoring, combined with the advantages of an application, like being able to access core functionality of the operating system. So it's a pretty awesome combination there. And then, of course, you can use XAML and C# as well, if you want to have a nice set of UI controls, for example. And then the other thing is, you can also, if you're a hardcore application 3D game developer like Epic, and you've got a lot of C++ code and it's calling Direct3D, well, that works too. For now, I want to talk a little bit about the work that Visual Studio team has done for this project for Windows 8, and it'll in fact affect some of how we see the source code that I'm going to be talking about in the rest of this talk. Fundamentally, the first thing we did is we added C++ language support that is current. So it's been brought up to the C++ 2011 standard, and they've even gone beyond that to add some additional capabilities in the language that facilitate use of the Windows runtime and some of the corresponding APIs like COM objects. It also incorporates new project templates for DirectX C++ app. You can just go through the file new project and you pick Direct3D, and there it is. It'll build an entire framework. You've got a spinning cube, and it's got shaders, and the application structure is all ready for you to just fill in your content. As part of that, you can actually treat GPU code like you would any other piece of code. You get syntax highlighting in the window. When you hit F5, it compiles it, puts it in a file that you can then send into your application package that gets installed in the user's machine that you can then load. So it's treated, HLSL, the GPU programming language of Direct3D, is treated just like any other language in terms of the way the IDE works, including packing them into the package. And then there is also some support for not just visual, well, for actually processing other media types besides shaders, like textures and 3D models. And then also, if you get the pro version, you can visualize those inside the IDE as well. So if you're an art guy, or if you yourself make an art piece and you bring it into the 3D environment into your IDE and say, hey, when I run it on the game, it looks like there's a piece missing. And then you can open it up inside the Visual Studio tool and see if the piece is missing from the art asset that was originally provided to you, or if it's a bug in your code. You could tell that just by running inside the IDE. And then it also now includes support for debugging the DirectX pipeline. You can evaluate the status of the graphics API calls that you're sending down. You can look at a particular pixel on the screen and say, okay, what are all the API calls that I made that actually could affect that pixel, and what did they each do to it? So if you find an artifact, you can click on the artifact and work that out. So I'm going to give a little bit of a diagram here about what happens during initialization. What happens is when the user clicks on your icon, say your smart tile, the first thing the operating system does is identifies a package that needs to be executed, looks in the package, and gets a splash screen out of that package and puts it on the screen. So this is the splash screen. It's a specific size. You know, you need to author one and put it in your app package as part of the submission process. And, that's there so that the user gets instant feedback before the OS has even begun to load any of your code that is the application that's being launched. Okay, and then so that screen stays up during the time your application gets loaded by the operating system. So the actual binaries of your DLLs and XEs, they get put into memory during that time. And then as soon as they're there, your load method gets called by the OS. And that's really the first function that you actually get to do anything significant in terms of work. There's the initialize methods and so on. You can do some things like set up some state potentially, but you really don't want to do anything like, for example, IO until you get to the load function. And then in the load function, you now have control and you could do some loading. But oddly enough, you don't really want to do any loading in the load function. What you really want to load is the absolute minimal amount of information that you can to get, for example, your loading screen up. So you load the asset that is the background for the loading screen. You load the music that you might want to play during the loading screen, and you know whatever other assets it requires you to draw the actual loading bar. So the reason you want to do this very minimally is to get up to this point is you want to actually run the animation for your loading screen and the run method. Because as we saw in the run routine, you have to call process events at least once every, I think it's a couple seconds. If the OS detects that you're not calling it to do its input processing for more than a couple seconds, the OS will terminate the app. It will basically say it is hung, and it will be wiped from the user's face. So you want to really do the minimal amount here so that you hopefully can load all the assets required to load your loading screen in well under 2 seconds, and then you can get into running. And when you're in the run mode here, you'll be running the animation while you actually load potentially any interesting game assets like large textures or 3D models or animation data or sound effects or, the whole rest of your level, for example. And then once you've got all of those elements in place, you can switch to your menu screen, which involves a different routine inside the same run method, just having different behavior there. And then when the user actually hits, okay, I'm ready to start playing, then the gameplay starts and you're in typically a different mode when you're actually playing. And then when they hit escape or swipe down, they come back into the menu screen. But that's really the overall, the way the flow is intended to work, as our recommendation for how to make these things work the best. So, one of the things I want to point out is there is this concept of the process lifetime manager. And other talks today have mentioned this, but really this is a mechanism by which the operating system makes sure that the user's experience is always the best it can be. So fundamentally what happens is if your application is foreground, every other application is being throttled back. Typically what will happen is that when your application loses foreground and gets occluded, maybe it gets pushed off to the side, the operating system says, hey, nobody's looking at this anymore, and it stops executing its threads. So it's not going to slow anything down because no compute cycles are spent on that application. Now, it hasn't necessarily given up its memory, so it means that if you swipe back to that application through the new touch UI, it's all there, and those threads can start getting executed again. The user has no idea that, that it wasn't running the whole time. But the issue is that when it's behind there, it's in this what we call the suspended state, where there is no execution being applied to that code base. But there is a chance that, say, in the case where your application has consumed a lot of memory, that the foreground process may want even more memory than is available, and so your application will get terminated. There's a bunch of rules that determine how this exactly happens, but the point from a programming perspective is you can't really tell when you get suspended whether you're going to be suspended and brought back or whether you're going to be suspended and then terminated. So you have to set up your application code in such a way that you always assume that you will be terminated after being suspended. And so what that means is that you're going to have to persist any state that the user cares about, say how far they made it through the level, what position they're in, where all the bullets are, where the enemies are. All that information has to be saved out in a way that it can be brought back again. So your application will say, okay, I'm being suspended, I'm going to save out this state, and then if it gets terminated, when I come back and I'm loaded again, I'll reload all that state, I'll check to make sure that it was there, and I'll load it all. And then the goal for the Metro environment is for the user to never know that applications even can stop running. It's to make it look like they're always running all the time. And just get rid of this whole save your data and start your application thing, just make that all go away, if you want. So just make it so they don't have to deal with that. Now I'm going to talk about the other input mechanisms based on the sensor hardware. Fundamentally, the new operating system supports all three of these devices: an accelerometer, which tells you which direction gravity is pulling in, a gyro, which can actually measure the rate of turning of the device, how fast you're turning it in some direction, and then a magnetometer, which is, you know, which way is north. And so the operating system, you know, you can find out where all those are, you can query that information and get that information directly, or you can use this API called Sensor Fusion, in which the hardware company that made these provides a driver that combines the output of all three of them into a single unified result called, via this process called Sensor Fusion, which at the very end of this results in an actual estimate of the orientation of your device in space.